I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
Woo! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Your weekdays, 9 to 11 o'clock, offering you up a safe space for your independent thinker out there, or aspire to be. Today's Thursday. Next hour, we'll do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour. We're going to have Nate Baker in with us from Americans for Prosperity. There are updates, apparently, on the medical marijuana legislation. I tried to get a sense when I went to the activist training on Tuesday night, but we didn't really have time to talk. It sounds like there are going to be things in this that will be better than I had hoped, as if you're with me and you wanted to see Ballot Initiative 65 passed in its original form, which they could have done. Don't let any of these slimy politicians tell you that they couldn't give you 65 because it was an amendment to the state constitution. Well, that's true, but they could have done it in statute with essentially the exact same language. But they know better than the people. That's really what the lesson we should take from that. They know better than the people. And so they've made some changes to it, so we'll talk to Nate about that and other things that are going on with legislation stuff and with Americans for Prosperity themselves. So we'll get to that next hour. I found several good quotes of the day today, and I got to tell you, I don't have a whole... Well, I've got one big outrageous thing from the Biden administration yesterday. Holy cow. It's not even unique. It's just another... It's just another outrage. I'll just go ahead and tell you in advance. Go ahead and pull out your pay stubs while you're waiting on this story to come. I want you to take a good hard look at your federal withholding. And I guess I need to pass along another thank you for what you U.S. taxpayers are doing. But we'll get to that in a minute. This is a Chinese proverb that I found I really could appreciate. It says, a wise man makes his own decisions. An ignorant man follows public opinion. I'll let each person to decide which side of that you're on. Mark Twain has said, if you find yourself on the side of the majority, it's time to stop and reassess your position. I say that to all of you out there who believe in things like COVID or America needs to run the world, these kinds of things. Anyway, here's a quote from the great Ron Paul. And I run across these things and always think, boy, Republicans were so close to getting one right. Now, I know a lot of you think you got it right in 2016. I voted for Donald Trump, too. But Donald Trump wasn't a thinker. No real core beliefs. Not a lot of deep thought with Donald Trump. And you don't need deep thought for everything. He had some good instincts on things. That's better than a lot of just flat-out corruption. But he wasn't a deep thinker. But we were so close in 2008. The media picking apart... Or really not picking apart even, just ignoring Ron Paul and the Republicans telling you that John McCain was the guy, not Ron Paul. But you were so close. You were so close to getting one right when Ron Paul was leading in a ton of national polls on the Republican side. Ron Paul getting more donations from active duty military than I think all the other candidates combined. The guy that was running around talking about peace and ending wars in 2008, active duty military. We're shelling over dollars to try to get him into the White House because active duty military in 2008 realized the catastrophe that was Afghanistan and Iraq. Little did they know they would also be heading into Libya and Syria and Somalia and Yemen. But the great Ron Paul was so close. Ron Paul has recently written this. He said, freedom is not defined by safety. Freedom is defined by the ability of citizens to live without government interference. Government cannot create a world without risk, nor would we really wish to live in such a fictional place. Only a totalitarian society would even claim absolute safety as a worthy ideal, because it would require total state control over its citizens' lives. Liberty has meaning only if we still believe in it when terrible things happen and a false government security blanket beckons. That's a statesman right there that actually understands freedom and liberty. Not your rank and file Republican, to be sure, and certainly better than what we have on the Democrat side. I ran across this as a meme. I'm telling you, I don't have a whole lot for today's show. I'll probably have to scan some headlines during the break. Got stuff to talk with Nate about, but world sometimes becomes uninteresting to me. I tried to watch a little bit of the morning news. It was the same old crap. Boosters this, boosters that. Are they, will they, won't they? It's like Ross and Rachel with the booster shots. I ran across this tweet someone sent out. They said that there's a new Matrix movie. I don't know if it's out yet or it's coming out. I'm a big Keanu Reeves fan. More for the fact that Keanu Reeves is really, really well known to be a really decent human being. I don't know if you've ever seen stories. I've talked about it on the show before, but if you read stories of ordinary people's interaction with Keanu Reeves out in the real world, he seems like a truly, genuinely good guy. And that's out in Hollywood with a bunch of self-obsessed, narcissistic panderers. I don't know how else to describe them. A lot of people out in Hollywood that I wouldn't want to grab a beer with. Keanu Reeves, supposedly very good. And The Matrix, particularly the original Matrix movies, such incredible storytelling in that when you finally realize it. It took me about 5 times watching The Matrix before I caught on. I may not be the swiftest guy out there, but The Matrix movies are great. They got a new one coming out. This guy tweeted out, the actors from The Matrix are 60 now. This new movie, they're going to have to take the red pill, the blue pill, 2 white pills, a vitamin C supplement, Synthroid, Miralax, and a water pill just to struggle opening a JPEG in bullet time. And then there was this. I ran across this, and I actually, as far as a quote of a day, I think I verified this. I didn't see any challenges to this. I have found when I'm tracking down my quotes of the day, a lot of things are attributed to people who didn't actually say things. You'll see long paragraphs, and someone will ascribe it to Clint Eastwood or Sylvester Stallone or somebody that, you know, some kind of a Hollywood tough guy or something. You'll find out they never said these things. People can just slap words onto a picture of somebody and claim it to be a quote from them. This one was odd, and I believe it must be paraphrased because this is from Leonardo da Vinci. And they didn't really talk like this back in the day, but I didn't see any challenges to this, so maybe this is somewhat paraphrased, but he actually said this, but I thought it was a brilliant quote. This is Leonardo da Vinci. He said, and this is so appropriate for today's time, he said, if you find from your own experience that something is a fact and it contradicts what some authority has written down, then you must abandon the authority and base your reasoning on your own findings. If you find from your own experience that something is a fact and it contradicts what some authority has written down, then you must abandon the authority and then base your reasoning on your own findings. And in today's day and age, this is the CDC. This is Thomas Dobbs. This is just about every authority that is anywhere near the COVID stuff. We have found out so many things that are facts. Ivermectin works, and ivermectin is safe. It's not 100% in any category, either category, but it's great. That is a fact. Ivermectin has been one of the miracle drugs, according to the WHO, in their list of essential medications. That is a fact. Thomas Dobbs tweets out, people are eating horse paste. Quit doing that. So we must abandon Thomas Dobbs when we find out that he is not dealing with facts. When we find out something is a fact. When we know that natural immunity to coronavirus is far superior to anything else that man has created. And yet they tell you to set that aside. Set that very obvious fact aside and take an unproven, untested, experimental gene therapy injection. Instead, you must set aside all of the authorities that are telling you to do that, all the way down to, yes, your own doctor. If your own doctor has not said to you, you ask him if you need the vaccine. If your doctor doesn't say, well, I don't know, have you had COVID? and recovered from it? If your doctor does not ask you that question, you don't have a very smart doctor. It's one of the most obvious questions, scientifically based, obvious questions they should possibly ask. So if that's another authority that you need to set aside and base your reasoning on your own findings. Very interesting, Leonardo da Vinci, one of the brilliant minds of all times. Guy was some kind of a time traveler. I'm not really sure. You've heard of this thing called the Akashic Record. Have you ever heard this term before? There is this idea that somehow out in the ether, somewhere in the universe, or it, contained within us is a record of all things across all time, both past and future. And that some people are able to access this intense thing. I know it sounds all woo-woo and crazy, but there are people who come up with big advancements, Leonardo da Vinci being one of them, that you just nobody else saw coming. No one else could have conceived of what they were talking about. They say they can tap into this book of all knowledge, this not a physical book, but a metaphysical book of all knowledge. But Leonardo da Vinci, pretty fascinating guy. But he's exactly right. He was fighting the power back in whenever he was born. I get my history and dates are a little sketchy sometimes. When I come back, we'll talk about it was a good day yesterday in Rankin County, but probably just a temporary win. Parents need to continue to organize. Well, we'll talk about it on the other side of this break. Stay with me. So, there are some smiling faces visible in Rankin County schools today. Yay! There's something to celebrate there. The children have, Rankin County did vote to end the mask mandate for now. What needs to happen is these school boards need to understand that these mandates are off the table. Not set aside for a little while, not based on what they see as case counts or anything along those lines. They need to be gone for good because they're not effective. But, I'm reading through some of these articles during the break, and I'm going to read the Rankin County School Board's notice. And there are parents that are upset about this. They think it's going to put everybody in danger. So here's what happens. Here's how this thing plays out. We can all see it coming a mile away. Just like any other virus in any other year, in any country on planet Earth, there will be little outbreaks. Somebody will test positive. One of their buddies will get infected, and then they either get sick or they don't. And serious or it's not. I mean, it's the same every year. This is not a unique virus to children. Maybe a different virus, but it operates exactly the same way the flu and everything else does. Usually mild to maybe a couple of days of not feeling well, back at it. I mean, it's exactly like the flu. So the playbook is something like this. The reason they were able to remove the mask mandate for now was because the numbers went down, and they think that the numbers went down because of the mask mandate. Now, kids, again, because this is just like the flu or any other virus that has ever existed in the history of mankind, will, particularly heading into the fall and winter months when kids get less vitamin D, supplement your kids, ladies and gentlemen, some cases will arise. They will then say, we've started to see an uptick in cases because we let the kids out of the masks. They will put the kids back in the masks. The case count during fall and winter will continue to rise. They will refuse to acknowledge the uselessness of masks. And then when the cases go down naturally, just like every other virus does, they'll say, look, the masks are working. It is just the most insane thing. You can look at any chart of any large metropolitan area, I don't care where it is on planet Earth, and you see the peaks after the mask mandates. It has not put a dent in this ridiculous idea of masking. You can see, I mean, every one of these charts, it'll be like they go from 10 to 20 cases, put a mask mandate on. The next thing you know, there's 500 cases with the mask mandate going on. And they still refuse to say what they always say. And this is the really hard thing to combat about this. they always have this thing to say, well, it would have been much worse. Oh, we know that even though we masked our entire city and we had this huge spike after masking, it would have been worse if we hadn't done the masking. The problem with that is Sweden. I mean, it's just, it is the argument. Sweden has 9% mask compliance there. They've had no problems. They really haven't had a problem with Delta variant. Now, Sweden, I think, is in, if this vaccine, if the concern about the vaccine is that people are going to be more susceptible to the disease, is something even our own lying Walensky at the CDC acknowledged, that if you've been vaccinated, you're more susceptible to serious disease. Sweden may actually see an uptick as a result of their vaccination program. But for last year, they are the litmus test. South Dakota's okay. Florida is okay for these. But there were still a lot of Americans, even in South Dakota and in Florida and in Texas, that went hysterical about COVID and wore a bunch of masks. Sweden is really, it is the thing to look at. There is no scientific basis for explaining why Sweden, which is inhabited by human beings, would have a dramatically different outcome than anywhere else. Sweden did not mask up. They didn't lock down. They didn't do anything, and they fared better than most places. So the Rankin County School Board believes that they have done this based on the science and the data at the time. But boy, you live by the data, die by the data. So all of you parents who have taken your guard down thinking, you know, we beat it. Look, I was at the Rankin County School Board meeting yesterday. Nothing that happened at that meeting. God love the speakers. Two people had the courage to get up and present in front of this board. They could have just been mumbling. They could have gotten up and sang a Bee Gees song. And the school board would have taken it in the same, because that is not at all to denigrate the people who stood up and spoke. There should have been 50 of them. Those are the two heroes for the children in Rankin County. But they are just following this ridiculous data, and they will follow this data right back into a mask mandate. What it needs to be is understood, and parents need to keep the pressure up. They should go in there and they should thank them. Thank you for freeing the face of our children. But don't think about putting this thing back on. We don't really care what the numbers are. We're not living by your level one, level two, level three. You don't force our children. You don't make medical decisions for our children. It was interesting to me yesterday, and I don't know if anybody else in the room had this same feeling, but at the beginning of the Rankin County School Board meeting yesterday, they had us all stand up, put our hand over our heart, and they did the Pledge of Allegiance. And I sat there participating in this ritual, realizing, do they realize the irony of recognizing the American flag and what it stands for while they ignore what it stands for? You know, that's what a lot of symbolism does. It becomes, particularly with repetition, becomes completely meaningless. They don't think about the words. And a lot of us probably do this in church. You recite prayers that you recite every single week, but there's so much by rote that in the back of your mind you're thinking, God, what am I going to have for lunch? That everybody was standing up, pledging allegiance. You know, everybody's so proud to be an American, while this same school board strips Americans of the rights to make decisions for their children. I found it to be a tad bit hypocritical, maybe ironic would be the word. And so I'm reading through some of these stories. Let me see what some of these parents said. I mean, Cassie Wilson, they got a comment from her at WAPT. She says this controversial statement: medical decisions should be left for the parents to decide, not the school board. That's controversial in today's world for some reason. She's got a kindergartner, apparently. And she says, I'm not against masks. I'm respectful of people. If they want to wear their mask, I will support them 100%. I don't want it to be forced on my family or my child. The most rational position you could possibly have in the face of this. Yet, further down here, as I said, this is somebody, Melissa, to say that the numbers are going down, but they're going down because we're wearing masks. See, there it is. They believe that the mask is why the case counts go up or down. Mask on, cases down. There's no scientific evidence for this whatsoever. There aren't even studies done in controlled environments. I've read them on this air the masks don't work. Another person said they're being selfish right now, and I think Mississippi is a southern hospitality state. We should care more about neighbors. She wants the mask to stay on. You're being disrespectful of others to not wear the mask. As I say, they have weaponized, absolutely weaponized, our goodness against us. We all want to do what's right for other people, but we don't have to sacrifice ourselves for some virtue signaling. The Rankin County Board of Trustees, they said masks are not required but highly recommended, which just shows you they believe that they still work and that they pose no harms. When the exact opposite is true, they do not work and they do impose great harms. Masks will still be required on all buses due to the inability to social distance, of course. We have been monitoring school, district, and county data to determine our next steps. And they go through this. This is the data. People in Rankin County need to keep the pressure up. Unfortunately, as I was looking for these stories, I just did a quick internet search for, you know, Rankin County Board masks, and one of the things that pops up is an August 11th headline that said, "Angry parents flood Rankin County School Board." And what's amazing is it was about mask mandates. Rankin County parents were furious on August 11th. But after the mask mandates have been on and the children have been forced into these dirty, filthy, ineffective, dangerous masks, there was no flooding of angry parents to that board meeting yesterday. So the parents went and expressed their outrage, but when they were ignored, they stood down. They went, "Oh, well, I guess they're not going to listen to us, and I guess everybody just checked out." That's the exact wrong tactic. You need to keep the pressure up on these people. You need to let them, you need to make them think very, very long and hard before the next mask mandate. What I believe, these school board members will slap that thing right back on your child at a moment's notice. At a moment's notice. They won't have any hesitation because there's been no real pushback from the parents, apparently, since August 11th. And again, get out in front of this because the vaccine mandate is coming your way. You don't figure out how to teach the school board a lesson and make sure that they work for you, not for Thomas Dobbs, not for Anthony Fauci, not for the pharmaceutical companies. If you want them working for you, you better get them under control before that vaccine mandate rolls out on your children. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. Next hour, we'll have Nate Baker in with us from Americans for Prosperity. We're going to talk about what's going on with medical marijuana. Sounds like the rumor is they've come out with a bill. We're going to take a look at exactly what form it takes and anything else that might go on if a special session is called. We're all expecting that that's going to happen. The vaccine continues to disappoint. They looked at, you know, talking about kids and just how vulnerable our children are that lead to these ridiculous mask mandates, and they will be hysterically pushing these shots on our children as well. A study released on September 16th by Los Angeles County contains two remarkable findings. First of all, students, most of whom are not vaccinated, have a lower COVID positive rate than the teachers and the staff, most of whom are vaccinated. Huh. That's weird. Students who are not vaccinated have a lower positive rate than teachers and staff who are vaccinated. Isn't that odd? And the positive test rate among students that are quarantined because a classmate tested positive, you know, this ridiculous thing where they draw a 30-foot circle around one person who got a positive test result, not because the child was sick and sneezing on everybody. They got a positive test result, so they go in and draw a chalk circle about 30 feet. Who was sitting in the circle yesterday? And they send them home. The positivity rate of these kids quarantined because they were around somebody who tested positive is 0.2%. 0.2%. That's one kid out of every 500. Am I doing my math right? One kid out of every 500 that they quarantine at these schools because these nut jobs and their hysterical reaction to COVID, one out of every 500 children actually test positive for this. Holy crap. We don't know if the vaccine is completely useless yet. For some, there may be some limited benefit. I am open to wherever the facts take me, even if I don't want an experimental jab. Maybe for some people it has some benefit to them, but it also has some cost. We don't know what this spike protein circulating through your body does, but it certainly is not weighing the risk of this being an experiment. But that has not stopped a full court press. Did you hear what Joe Biden said yesterday? Oh, this is one of my, you know, I have a lot of pet peeves. I'm like a no-kill shelter of pet peeves. I've got so many of them. But Joe Biden yesterday came out and said this.
Joining us today. To beat the pandemic here, we need to beat it everywhere. And I made and I'm keeping the promise that America will become the arsenal of vaccines, as we're the arsenal for democracy during World War II. We've already shipped nearly 160 million doses to 100 countries, more than every other country has donated combined. America's donations of a half a billion Pfizer vaccines through COVAX have already begun to ship. Today, I'm announcing another historic commitment. The United States is buying another half billion doses of Pfizer to donate to low and middle-income countries around the world. This is another half billion doses that will all be shipped by this time next year. And the United States is leading the world on vaccination donations. We need, as we're doing that, we need other high-income countries to deliver on their own ambitious vaccine donations and pledges. And while vaccinating the world is the ultimate solution to COVID-19.
I got to tell you, when he said that, what's ultimate solution? Wasn't that a Nazi term? Was that what it was called? Was it the final solution? Might have been final solution. I heard ultimate solution and I thought, that feels a little depopulation-y to me.
We know that we have to act to save lives now. That's why the United States is providing nearly $1.4 billion to reduce COVID-19 deaths and mitigate transmission through bulk oxygen support, expanded testing, and strengthening healthcare systems and more. And we're going to help all of us build back better
there
to prepare
is.
For the next pandemic, because there will be a next time. We all know that.
Yeah. How about that? There will be a next time. They're never going to stop this stuff. There's so many things wrong in what he just said. Of course, India was able to stop COVID in its tracks in some of its states for about $68, I think, was the total cost nationwide, because they just handed out blister packs of ivermectin and, I think, some zinc. They stopped a COVID, a Delta variant, too. Ooh, that scary Delta variant. They stopped it in its tracks with some little blister packs of ivermectin pills. Instead, for us, and this is where I tell you, go ahead and pull out your paychecks. I'll give you a second. Take a look at your federal withholding. What kind of warm, fuzzy feeling does it give you to know that I believe this brings us up to the total of 1.1 billion doses? And I believe this may be exclusively Pfizer. God, you got to hand it to the Pfizer lobbyists. I hope they're getting paid well, because they are returning on their investment in Pfizer lobbyists. I mean, Big Pharma's always done well. But I'll bet you they are carrying Pfizer lobbyists around on people's shoulders down in the Capitol, down the hall, chanting their names. So that's around just what the federal government, your U.S. federal government, has taken $20-plus billion out of your paychecks to inject an experimental vaccine that Pfizer sells at a profit into the arms of people far and away from the United States in the first place. And it is these politicians, it's not unique just to this with Joe Biden. This one is particularly egregious, but for any politician to go on air and to brag, to try to take credit for what a charitable, what a humanitarian he is, for him to steal money from a bunch of people who are not him, to give it to a company like Pfizer, and then try to take credit for handing these vials of this gene therapy out to people around the world is about as despicable. It's one of the most despicable things about our federal government. I don't know how many of you out there, you know, there's a lot of vaccine lovers out there who really believe that this is just fantastic and you think everybody should take the jab. I encourage you to donate as many doses as you want to people around the world, voluntarily. You can imagine there's enough people in love with this gene therapy that they probably could have set up a GoFundMe page and some of the true vaccine zealots would have dumped a few bucks in there to vaccinate the world. But for the government to come into your paycheck, steal money from you, give it away to other countries, and then brag about it, try to take credit of it like some kind of a humanitarian, like they're some kind of a charitable human being, is disgusting. Joe Biden says, I made a promise and now I'm keeping that promise. What the hell does that mean? Can you imagine one of your neighbors making a promise that everybody in my neighborhood is going to give money to this? I'm just going to go take it from them. Because I made the promise, the other neighbors would say, I didn't make that promise. Get the hell off my lawn. But there you go. Just another thing. I mean, and really, you know, it's $20 billion. This happened during Trump's administration. It happened. How many ventilators did we make for the world during the Trump administration? Foreign aid, when it comes to just general foreign aid, it's hundreds of billions of dollars we give away. We found out a couple of weeks ago that we actually pay for the entire national security apparatus of Pakistan. Are you still looking at your paychecks? Because my big question, I always follow these stories up with one question. Why are you paying federal taxes? And the inescapable reason, particularly for a conservative, I mean, there's still some Kool-Aid drinkers out there that believe that that's the price you pay for a civilized society. But most of you, it would be nice, maybe it would wake us up a little bit if you would just recognize and say it out loud to yourself. The reason I pay my federal taxes is fear. I fear my government. I fear standing up against this machine. I fear what they will do to me if I do not hand over this money that they demand from me every year. That might at least get you off your duffs a little bit. $20 billion into the pockets of five, and that's just what we gave away. I believe the last year, the statistic I saw was $178 billion worldwide spent with these pharmaceutical companies on these vaccines. All of it at taxpayer expense, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. $178 billion. And with these vaccine companies, if they find any kind of product that makes them $1 billion a year, that's one of their blockbusters. They celebrate it. They can't believe it. It's high fives through the boardroom. We found another one that these saps, another pharmaceutical that these saps will buy up. Statins? Oh, that was a home run. It's not doing any good for American people's health. But they made a blockbuster with that. But they couldn't have even dreamed of the riches that they are seeing right now from these vaccines. And the taxpayer is footing the entire bill. Now, I firmly support people's Second Amendment rights. Out of my cold, dead hands, I'm with you on all of that stuff. But I, for the life of me, I cannot figure out why the American conservatives allow this theft to take place, this stealing money from you to hand it off to people that you don't want to give money to. And the only thing it could possibly be, it's fear. You fear your own government. And you feared this government. Everybody I'm talking to right now has feared this government since the day you started paying taxes, because I don't know a single person who's enthusiastic about doing it. There's probably some out there. But I don't have it in my quotes of the day today, but isn't one of the famous quotes, the government should fear the people, not the other way around, essentially. Well, that has been on its head for a long, long time. Anyway, from the world, I say thank you to the U.S. taxpayer, because you apparently are now donating 1.1 billion experimental gene therapies for countries far and wide. Does that make you feel good?
At first I was afraid, I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong, I learned how to get along, and so you're...
I'm going to... while I can, I'm really good at getting conservatives and Republicans on my side for a minute when I criticize Joe Biden and rip apart one of his speeches, but I can't help myself. Remember that it was Donald Trump that wrote the first huge checks to Pfizer and Moderna for an untested, unproven and I would certainly say unnecessary, emergency use authorization. He was writing checks to Pfizer and Moderna before they even had a product, supposedly. So I'm just saying, I know, I'm not supposed to say those things. I'm supposed to pretend like Donald Trump didn't have anything to do with this mass experiment on humanity, even though he is going around right now at his rallies telling you he's saved 100 million people's lives. For some reason, there is this blind spot with conservatives and Republicans when it comes to Trump and this shot where they say, oh, if Trump was in charge now, this would be totally different. Really? Because what kicked this whole thing off is Operation Warp Speed. And one of the big parts of Operation Warp Speed, which creeped out a lot of people like me, who look at things very objectively, because I was not in love with anybody, I thought, wow, using the military to distribute this thing feels a little creepy to me. It was a big component of Operation Warp Speed. Well, now I wonder how some of our military members feel that they were responsible for, and I mean, they were ordered to do it, not their choice. Headline now, Biden pushing for dishonorable discharges and court martials for troops who refuse these shots. I'm telling you, serving this system. And this should be a lesson to leftists, too. I mean, you know, I know you think you're winning now, and you look at the rubes like me who are in the control group, risking my life every day. I'm such a hero. To risk my life in this control group. But you look down on me. You don't understand the value of what I bring to your scientific experiment. But there will be something coming your way that you don't want. It'll be too late. So now we're going to run out the free-thinking military members. And the sick thing is, I don't know if they equivocate for people in the military who have already recovered from COVID and have more robust immunity than a vaccine offers by 6 to 13 times, depending on the study. But it's just you take this jab. And the sick thing is with the military, there's a lot of stories. I don't know if I've ever covered them here before, but the military is pretty much known to be guinea pigs for a lot of pharmaceutical things. They test a lot of stuff in the military because once you sign on the dotted line, you do, in that particular scenario, you really do have no control over your body. You hand yourself over to the U.S. government. And new recruits will tell you before they're deployed, they go down the line. Just a bunch of white lab coats with syringes, bam, into one arm, take a step, bam, into the other arm. Take another step, bam, into the first arm, take a step, bam, into your left butt cheek. These troops, you know, they get inoculated with a lot of things. And we have things like Gulf War syndrome after the first Gulf War. I'm not sure. I need to do some research on that. I don't remember if that was tied to an inoculation. There was a lot of burn pits and a lot of environmental disasters going on in Iraq War I that made a lot of soldiers sick. But I believe Gulf War syndrome was tied back to one of these experimental medications given to our troops. But now Biden's going to run them out on the rail, court-martial them if they do not participate in this experiment. Serving this system is a dead-end street. And it becomes more apparent every day. Like the doctors right now who are pushing these narratives and pushing these shots. Boy, something's going to come your way. You have ceded all control over your relationship with your patients to places like the CDC and the FDA. You don't think that's going to come back and bite you? You think they're going to put you back in control of patient care at some point now that you've given them this kind of authority in this, air quotes here in the studio, emergency? You think just going along to get along, it's going to keep your paychecks coming. There's no doubt about that. Right now, it's going to keep your paychecks coming. But you just wait till government is in total control of American healthcare. It's damn near there anyway. You doctors are going to be set aside too. I mean, pretty soon, AI. I mean, for a lot of doctors, really, do we really need one of these pill-pushing doctors? You come in, you complain of something. You just go through the list of what pills are good for that complaint and you put it on it. You don't investigate anything. That job could be done by a computer. But this is really, really sick. Seems like this would be a national security issue, doesn't it? Go ahead and get rid of, I would imagine, I believe, let me see if the story says what the percentage of service members that have not gotten this vaccine. And the sad thing is, and it doesn't matter what the profession is, whether it's military, nursing, any of these things, you had such power. You had such tremendous power. And you just didn't realize it. You didn't talk about it amongst yourselves. A lot of military members said, well, you know, I think they're going to mandate this thing. I'll go ahead. I guess I'll. The number of people who said, I guess I'll just go ahead and do it. You could have stopped this in its tracks. You nurses who took it, but you didn't really want to, but you just didn't want to cause a problem. You just figured you'll just go ahead and do this thing. And that way you don't have to worry about any deadlines or trying to file for an exemption. You just went ahead and did it. If you had all stood firm, this goes with parents and mask mandates across the board. If people would stand firm, you could shut these things down in a heartbeat. I think that's part of the reason that they love to divide us so much. So we don't all get together and realize the power we have. Military has power. Nurses have power. Teachers have power. Parents have power. We just don't exercise it because we're so damn divided. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. So every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with some representative of Americans for Prosperity. Stephen Utroska apparently has gone to New York City. No, he went to Washington, D.C., didn't he?
This time, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think he said he was going up to D.C. So we have Nate Baker in with us, who we've had many times. So, Nate, I appreciate you coming in. So, what I want to hear about, and we started talking about this at your event on Tuesday. By the way, that was a great event.
Your grassroots training.
Yeah, were you? I mean, that was a great turnout.
Great turnout, good group, and some good instruction. And we're looking forward to finishing that series out.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, was that oversubscribed to what you thought it would be?
Yeah. I mean, we had a really good turnout. We were very happy with that.
Yeah, it looked like it was full. Everybody had a good time. It was very
informative. Had to bring some extra chairs out.
Yeah. That's what you want.
Well, that's what you want.
Well, you know, the woman asked, why you were there. I guess maybe that's a question for the next thing. Y'all feed me every time I show up somewhere. I mean, if you have anything after 6 o'clock, I usually get fed. So,
right?
I mean, you know, I'll fight the power, but I can't do it on an empty stomach.
Chick-fil-A, nukes, you know, we try to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah. You know, and this is really important topic we should cover, so I'm going to waste some airtime on it. Chick-fil-A had bagged waffle chips. I'd never seen that. Obviously, this is better for their catering business.
Right, because the fries get soggy.
Right.
Cold.
Those chips are fantastic.
They're great. You can dip them in the sauce and everything.
Do they sell these things retail-y?
I'm not sure.
A huge opportunity left on the table. It's one of the best potato chips I've ever had.
Right. I would buy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They sell their sauce now. So.
Wow. Yeah. I bet you it's coming out. So anyway. All right. Well, great event the other day. You're doing this on Tuesday nights.
Tuesday nights all the way through September and October. We're skipping that last Tuesday of October because we're going to be on our all staff. And then the first Tuesday of November, and that's the full series.
I know to get a certification in this, you need to attend 4 classes. If somebody wanted to come in, even though they missed the first class, can they still attend?
Absolutely. You just got to attend 4 to get the certification. And even if you don't want to get that certification, it's useful classes every time.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, good. Well, if anybody wants to know about that, you can either email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com, or go to on Facebook. It's Americans for Prosperity Foundation.
Correct. Americans for Prosperity Foundation on Facebook.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, let's get into what I think is probably on a lot of people's minds, at least 74% of the people's minds. The ballot initiative 65 that was struck down by the Supreme Court, the legislature between the House and the Senate have been trying to negotiate a replacement bill for medical marijuana in the state. Y'all are getting word that some headway has been made and they maybe come to something.
We have some information on what we're thinking the proposed legislation may look like. And this is all based on what we're hearing from members of the legislature. But we're not entirely sure what will stay from this or not. So we have some updates of what we are now seeing may be included in that.
Right. And so this is from reports from members, but we don't have anything in writing yet.
No, nothing in writing yet. And a lot of these things are things we anticipated may be in it when it comes around. We're also hearing, you know, on the question of when it will happen. We were looking at, you know, we anticipated this will be a special session to deal with this given the outcome of the Supreme Court case. And we're hearing from the governor's office that there is still an intention of having a special session. And then from some members of the legislature think that it will just be handled in the regular session in January. So time will tell on that. I'm not entirely sure. But I think we may still see a special session.
Well, do these legislators and the governor, I mean, is there any sense in this that there are the whole reason behind this bill was to help people who are in pain and who are suffering and current pharmaceuticals are not working for them? You know, so,
right.
I mean, you know, the difference between calling a special session at the beginning of October and trying to pass this thing by the end of January means a lot to somebody
sure.
who is suffering with Parkinson's or chronic pain or PTSD. That's a long time.
Every
for
month
them.
Matters. Every yeah. week matters. Yeah.
And they've already put it off. I mean, this should have, we probably would have been going with this program by now. Don't we think that had 65 stood, we'd probably see dispensaries open now.
It'd be rolling out very quickly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I certainly hope that makes a difference to them, that this is not all politicking. I think this is real lives and people are suffering, so they need to get on this. So what are you hearing in the bill, the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yeah, so a few things. So one restriction that we anticipate that has been discussed is that they would make it only indoor grow and cultivation, not outdoor, so they would not allow outdoor growing. Not entirely sure why.
I guess
it out of sight, I guess. People don't want to see marijuana fields, I guess. So that is one piece that may
well,
be in there.
And that's kind of important, too, because to build the infrastructure for an inside grow is extremely more
right.
expensive than just, I mean.
You need lights.
Yeah.
You need all kinds of things.
Right.
And
the infrastructure of a giant facility, because these are not small operations.
Right.
So you're talking about very large actual facilities as opposed to just being able to buy land
right.
and
all the
cultivate.
Irrigation and the lighting.
Right.
It's if you've ever seen a grow up, that's they're pretty pretty significant little setups enterprises there.
Yeah, just the electricity on that has got to go into the tens of thousands
that
a year
that used to be
difference.
How they found them.
Right, exactly.
They'd see the power usage right. and they say, I bet you there's a grow up here.
Right.
So it is very intensive.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I think that's kind of a that, and we're going to talk about it more just from what you said before. I didn't hear a lot of the things we're going to talk about as being being especially targeting to the small grower, except for that one. That feels like that is an extremely targeted thing to create a situation of needing a lot of capital to do these things,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to being able to say, I'm a farmer, I know how to grow plants, and I've got some land. Boom, I can transition into this
right.
crop. Now it is
special setup.
Yeah. Now right. I'm a farmer. I got to find $250,000 to put together a grow operation.
Right.
So that's disappointing to me. But anyway, go ahead.
It is. And again, you just have to ask why. Why,
yeah.
why this additional restriction? Another new thing that's being discussed is that the Department of Health, which was originally going to oversee it, would now be sharing it with the Department of Agriculture because the Department of Agriculture would oversee the cultivation piece. The Department of Health would oversee the rest of the administration of that. That's kind of to be expected. I don't think it's particularly good or bad. And then another piece is that prescription would have to be face-to-face. It would explicitly not allow telemedicine for prescriptions, although there's some better news on it. There's a good side of that in a little bit that we'll get to because they expanded the list of who can prescribe the marijuana. They also expanded the list of qualifying conditions, so that's actually a good thing.
Did they take any away out of
the list? No, they codified it a lot more, and chronic pain is still in there in this list that we're just, you know, this is all you know, kind of proposed. But they did ensure that it must be a defined medical condition that's previously defined. So you can't just say, I've got chronic pain. It has to be associated with a real, you know, condition of some sort.
Right, okay.
So that's good. They're not restricting it. They're not taking things away. And patients and caregivers would still have medical marijuana cards, so that hasn't changed.
Let me go back to the conditions thing
yeah.
for a second. How can they expand the conditions list? I know, 65, if everything that was in 65 is still there and they've codified some of those things, that's a pretty good list. But, you know, they're always finding CBD and THC addressing new things. Would that be something that the legislature would have to do to expand that list, or will that end up being something the State Department of Health just says, okay, well, we're recognizing this as another treatable condition?
That's to be determined, but I do think, if I was to think, it would give that to the Department of Health. I'm not entirely sure, but
yeah.
because people know things change, it would be kind of wild to have to push another
right.
bill through to update the statute
yeah.
there for something that granular.
Okay.
But who knows?
Yeah.
What do we do with legislature? Who knows?
Right.
Another thing that was discussed quite often, and other states have dealt with this in different ways, is a THC limit. And so the idea right now is a 30% THC limit. I don't know exactly how that impacts. I know some people say that's not really a big deal. It's to the point of why even have it in there.
Yeah, I'm just going to tell you all right now, if there's anybody out there who thinks that the Mike Madison Show is always pushing drugs, like I'm up here in tie-dye, Nate and I were talking about this off air before we started, and I asked him, is 30% high? And he said, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Neither one of us have any idea what we're talking about in this kind of stuff. But that's similar to, like beers have always had limits. They've relaxed for a while.
Right.
I remember when Abita first came, I think that was Turbo Dog, came to Mississippi, and it was maybe, 6%. And it was a big thing.
Big deal, like high gravity.
Right.
And there's a limit of what can be sold in the grocery store versus has to be sold in like a liquor store because it's no longer, one qualification or another. So I don't know.
But this THC limit on this is similar to
alcohol
right.
content and a beverage.
So it's a potency of
right.
the stuff. Okay.
That's what it would be.
All right. So 30%, we have no idea what that means.
Correct. Yeah. I don't. Unfortunately, there are plenty of people who do.
Well,
you
know,
probably research it online.
And I'm sure it's like anything else. If that's low for some conditions that,
right.
that need a higher level, then I would imagine the quantity that you consume
right.
would just have to be mm-hmm. higher. So as long as there aren't limits that restrict that, it's probably
right.
addressable.
Exactly. Like
yeah.
one shot of liquor or,
right.
Not to keep using recreational references, but,
right.
That's potency for you.
Yeah.
And so 65 had a 5-ounce limit, and this bill would have a 4-ounce limit as it's being discussed now in terms of what you can get in a particular visit or prescription at a time. Again, that's still quite a bit. I wonder why. Why move it from 5 to 4?
Yeah.
Why is that a big deal? But they're restricting that by an ounce.
Yeah.
Don't really know.
Well, is that during a time frame? Is that like every 2 weeks or
something
like that?
Yeah, I think it's dictated by the prescription.
Right.
But I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, that would be a difference. But that's pretty marginal. And a big thing that we anticipated with whatever legislation came out that it would be in this as well is it would allow for local zoning and local opt-outs, unlike Initiative 65. This was a big point of contention. It's why a lot of people think that the mayor challenged it in the first place. But this allows that within 60 days, if this bill were to pass, within 60 days after that passage, each local, counties, municipalities would have to opt out within 60 days.
Right. Say in our community. And that when you talk about municipalities, is that any of them? Could a county board of supervisors say they don't want it? Could a city hall say they don't want it?
I think it's counties and municipalities is what we understand
pretty much
this to be.
So if Mayor Mary doesn't want a dispensary in Madison, the city, she can control that. But
right.
it could theoretically still be in the county.
Right.
So,
I think, or vice versa, because I think about Oktibbeha County and how it's dry, but Starkville's not. So
is Oktibbeha County still dry?
Yes. And if you live in certain jurisdictions right outside of the city limits, the county sheriff will sit there and watch to see if you're drinking beer on your porch and they will arrest you.
Are
and
you
it happens
serious?
Every year and it's infuriating.
I did not know that. I spent a lot of time up in Oktibbeha County back in the late 1980s, and I can tell you it wasn't dry when, I'm sure it was legally,
right.
but it certainly had no effect on what took place when I was in college. We were
not.
Plenty wet up there when I was there.
Right.
Yeah. I tell you what, Nate, let's take a quick break because we're coming up on one. Let's take a break and come back. We're going to continue to flesh these out of what's going to be supposedly is going to be in this medical marijuana bill. I've still got some questions and some probably some challenges to what they're doing. So we'll do that when we come back. We're talking to Nate Baker, Americans for Prosperity. Stay with us.
Right into this world. All alone, God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Nate Baker, Americans for Prosperity. We're tracking we can say this is probably better than rumors. This
yes.
is, because it's pretty specific. So
right.
obviously,
it's sourced from discussions that have happened about what they want to do with this.
Right. And with the medical marijuana replacement bill, I guess is the only way to say it. All right, so we had discussed zoning. So cities, counties now can opt out. They have 60 days once the bill is passed. In the first 60 days, they can say, we want
right.
out, can't come to our area.
Right, if that bill would be passed, that would be the case. And if they did opt out, they would have the opportunity. They would basically be the same rules as like dry, wet county with alcohol to reinstate it. So the referendum and all those pieces, just like moving from a dry county to a wet county, that would follow with this as well.
Yeah.
So,
and so when you say referendum, that means the people have to say, vote. Yeah, they could want to vote. Did you ever get a sense of, because this zoning stuff was important, change that seemed to be inevitable, did you get a sense of how much of Mississippi, I mean, was it widespread that people didn't want this in their towns around Mississippi, or was
just town to town? Some communities did, some communities did not. I mean, obviously 74% of Mississippians voted to have the program.
Right.
But then there's some communities and localities that would did not want it in their town. A lot of people who, you know, they've been to other states and they're like, I don't really want dispensaries all over the place. And so I can understand that.
Yeah.
But do we live in a free country or not?
Right. And people, you know, this is one of the sad things, even in a red state like Mississippi, people just don't, they talk about free markets and capitalism. So they don't understand it. You know, I there was somebody on the station here that said, I don't want 16 dispensaries, you know, coming off the highway in Canton, Mississippi off I-55. Well, if you had 16 open, within 6 months, you'd have three.
Right.
You know, I mean,
if that.
Right.
Right.
I mean, competition and free markets will take care of
you
these
don't
things.
See 16 liquor stores in the same area.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So people just need to have some patience and understand that the less politicians and bureaucrats control things, the market will take care of the rest. Okay. All right. So what else on zoning?
So that's really, really the zoning. That's most of that. And then they, in addition, added from 500 feet to 1,000 feet for schools and churches, which is something that a lot of people were concerned about. So,
yeah, I mean, come on.
I mean, it's another 500 feet.
It's another football field and football field and a half. What is the thing? You know, I mean, that's almost like COVID, you know,
right.
Well, I mean, our kids, you know, they can see 500 feet, but they'll never walk another block. You know,
they're going to see it
stuff.
If they exist in town.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, this is going to be a situation where these are going to be business owners, just like liquor stores. And, you know, liquor stores don't have a bunch of drunks sitting around the doors of their place. You know what I mean?
Right.
This is going to be these are going to be medical facilities. I've seen them in Colorado. A lot of people have seen them in other states. They will be businesses. These are not
right. Businesses and individuals have to qualify through a process to
right.
use it. And I know why, and I keep using the, you know, analogy to liquor stores. I know that's everyone's concern, is that you're just going to have, it's going to be recreational next, and then you're going to have this, and then and that, like, snowball there, you know. And even if that was the case, it's just not, I don't think, the concern that people make it out to be.
Well, I mean, I've been to Colorado. I've been to California.
I've been to Vegas.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
It coexists just like liquor stores
right.
do. That's what it ends up being. There was a lot of hysteria here when we were talking about casinos. Casinos were just going to turn us into a state of sin, you
mm-hmm.
know, just degenerate gamblers everywhere and the mafia. I mean, I can't remember all the scaremongering that went around that. We just coexist with
and
these
sport
casinos.
Sport betting
right.
became a big controversy most recently because a lot of people enjoy throwing $20 on a game.
Right.
And then they make it out to be, you know, something horrible. So,
yeah,
you know, do we live in a country, free country, or do we not? And then another interesting stipulation that they would propose in this is that each dispensary cannot be within 1,500 feet from each other. So dispensaries cannot be within 1,500 feet from another dispensary. So
right.
Now, that's interesting because, A, like you were discussing just a second ago, why would I want to be right next door to competition if it's a business, right?
Right.
But what's interesting about that is because local, with this local opt-out, they can also zone it. So not, I can say opt-out entirely, or we could say, well, we're going to allow this area of the city to allow it and the rest of it can't, so I can zone it for that. But if you zone it, and then you add this 1,500-foot apart rule that basically ensures that you can only have a couple anyway, because if one or two people set up in that zone, now you kind of limited the geographic area that
right.
you could set one up in. And so I'm, you know, I'm sure there may be something nefarious incentives there to kind of buy up the town.
How many feet are in a mile? I always forget.
5,280.
Yeah. So 3,000 foot circle. I mean, theoretically, within a 3,000 foot circle,
right,
if you planted
radius.
One. Yeah, in a radius, you plant one in the middle of that, and that's it. You're done.
Pretty much.
And that's, you know,
depending on the size of the zone. So, a little interesting.
That will be gamed around, and you know what. This is just hitting me, but it's my natural suspicion. You'll see some places that want to create monopolies, probably for mm-hmm. some of their constituents who are good political contributors. So they'll zone. I mean, they do this with real estate
oh, yeah.
stuff. They'll run a highway by a big donor's
liquor
land.
Licenses. I mean,
yeah,
any number of industries here that
right.
have these games. You create the incentives and people will game it. That's
and,
just
and
how
that's
it is.
Why, you know, citizens, they fear this idea, like this guy who said, oh, I'm going to have 16 pot shops on the highway. Well, free market will take care of that. But But instead of waiting on the free market to do it, they encourage these kinds of things and don't realize the corruption that brings. As soon as you let bureaucrats and politicians control more and more of this stuff.
Now people buy it.
Now, yeah, people only with access will get these things, and you will end up with monopolies on this of the political favored, which is another thing that conservatives are kind of hip to. We know about this kind of corruption. We don't like it, but we actually encourage it because we won't accept that the free market should allow these things. And these regulations, politicians go out and say, well, hell, it's no different than COVID. We're going to put all these regulations in because we want to keep our communities safe and nice and all these. You know, it's always to protect the citizens.
Right.
But in the background, it just breeds corruption.
Right.
Yep.
You know, certain cities have certain family members that own disproportionate amounts of the real estate. Right.
Right. Or the highway just happens to run through that land they bought 3 years ago. You know, so now they have store frontage ways and stuff like that. Yeah, this is, you know, regulation breeds corruption.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. On the taxation piece, this would be proposed to have a 7% sales tax, but unlike previously, 18% of that 7% is earmarked for the city that it's in. So that's an incentive for them to get be able to tax some of that revenue and that additional revenue for marijuana dispensaries.
In 65, would any money have gone to local communities?
No. Which is why it would not have been earmarked, and that's why a lot of cities wanted that in there.
Right.
They want to be able to at least benefit from having that in their city.
Right.
So this would be in there. And then there'd also be a $15 excise tax per ounce. So in addition to that sales tax rate, you have 15 per ounce, just a flat $15 excise tax.
And neither one of us know how much
really
an ounce
know.
Costs.
I mean, I don't know how much it costs. And again, with these programs, it's different from, you know, just like on the black market. And that varies all geographically all over the U.S. I mean, anything that's not in a regulated market, you'll see wide variety of costs. And I know when Colorado started legalizing, that drove the prices down across the board because you had a lot more cultivation. And so, you know, I don't know exactly what that would translate to in terms of ratio of how much the ounce would be to purchase. So that would also be there, at least as it, again, all of this is as it's being discussed right now. We don't know for sure. Let me see. There would also be like no licensing caps. So there's a tier based for cultivation from like 1,000 feet to 100,000 feet. And so it gets very complicated there, but it's not the worst. $3,500, I think, for a startup start to finish. So.
I had to do an internet search for this.
Yes.
An ounce of marijuana in Oregon is going to go for anywhere from 150 to 250. So
yeah.
You're talking about somewhere between a 7 to 10% tax.
Something like that.
On an ounce. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, half the price of the ounce or anything like
right.
that.
Right. So. Okay. Well, I was curious. I didn't know how confiscatory that was. It still is another tax, though.
Yes. And then another interesting piece that is being discussed, this is another thing that a lot of people argued about, was the whole Mississippi protectionism piece of this. Like, is our foreign corporations going to come in and take the whole market over? And so this would include a 35% Mississippi residue requirement for the first year. So 35% of, I believe, equity in any of these licenses, these startups, cultivation, dispensary, whatever. 35% of that equity has to be for someone who's been in Mississippi for at least a year. And that goes away. Or sorry, that Mississippi requirement that goes away after the first year, as it's being discussed right now. So it gives Mississippians a first mover advantage is the thought behind that. But a lot of people, because they've seen the movement on this, have already started purchasing property
right,
in Mississippi that they've already had for like 3 years so that they can qualify. So, you know, I understand why people want that. But at the same time, I don't think it's going
to
do anything.
I'm not somebody who wants to really necessarily be protectionist, because again, I believe free market would, you know, I believe the lowest barriers to entry are the best to create the most competition. And I think Mississippians will outcompete, you know, some national brands. We've got a lot of great local restaurants in Mississippi that beat the pants off of a bunch of national chains. So that would definitely happen. At the same time, I think that's kind of an odd, I mean, the 35% thing, you know, these, like you say, some people have already moved down here, but many people will just, I mean, they do this with when they force you to have when they force state and federal contracts in to be based on minority contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of people just go out there and they find a minority,
right.
Put them on the letterhead, secure the contractor, pay
some
off
big
the minority.
Firm to, could say, hey, we'll give you 35% of this business for the first year
for the
or whatever.
First year, and then see ya.
And then I'd be like, yeah, okay, bet I'll just be on there and take it. I mean, a lot of people would just take that deal. Why
right.
wouldn't you?
Again, regulation breeds just corruption and skirting around the rules.
Right.
Yeah.
So. They hear the rules of the game. Let's find our way around the rules.
Right.
So that's just how it is.
In Mississippi, things I can't remember with 65. did anything sold in Mississippi have to be grown in Mississippi? Or is that the case in every state? Because you can't ship marijuana interstate, can you?
I think that's what basically ends up enforcing that, is the interstate commerce. Because federally, it's still illegal.
Yeah.
So I think it would have to be within the state.
So anything that's sold in Mississippi theoretically should be grown in Mississippi as well.
Okay. Right. And in order for it to get to the dispensary, through that has to be all – there's this whole – the idea also discussed with this is, you know, from seed to the storefront, so it's all tracked. So, yes, it would be – here we know exactly where each ounce sold came from in the state through the legal program.
Have you heard anything on testing facilities? This is another interesting thing that is not the sexy part of the business, I guess, between the grow and the sell, but there's also testing for all of these things. There'd be testing labs set up in Mississippi, or is the Department of Health doing that?
I'm not sure. I would imagine that it would be, you know, the Department of Health would be overseeing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can decide how they're going to end up doing that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. And I know we have, you know, there's really the three pieces. There's the cultivation and the processing and then the actual storefront dispensaries.
Right.
And then there's licenses for each of those that this would be discussing. And you have, I think each individual or business can have up to 5 dispensary fronts and only 1 processing and 1 cultivation. So it does put a cap on that as well, at least as it's being discussed in this bill.
Okay, wait, say that again. So you could have a farm, you could process products, and you could have up to 5 retail outlets.
But you could not have several farms.
I gotcha.
Right. And this is something we see with other types of businesses that people want to limit, like liquor licenses. You can only have a certain number of liquor stores per person.
Right.
So this is why you see families where every member of the family has their own liquor store.
Right.
Right. And so there will be ways around that too. So that is also being discussed in this kind of legislative version of medical marijuana. And the last thing that's very good that I was happy to see is that they have expanded the types of practices of medical professionals who can prescribe. So there's obviously MDs, but also optometrists, nurse practitioners, and physician assistants can, so long as they go through an 8-hour certification to prescribe it, and they have to renew that every 5 years. So that's kind of nice. Other individuals can qualify to do that.
Yeah, the 8 hours, that's almost reasonable. It's single day of class.
Day.
It's not a hair braiding 250 hours worth of certification stuff.
Not even
stuff,
learn
so.
Hair braiding.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, on balance, there are changes in there that from 65, but it doesn't sound like they really butchered it. I was very concerned that they would do things like take away qualifying conditions to make that more strict. That was one of my big concerns. And then do license limitations so that really it would be a couple of really big players could be the only people that could afford the licenses.
And that's what we saw with the other bills that came out during session before the court had ruled on 65. We saw very just obviously corrupt interests trying to, you know, buy out their opportunity against everybody else.
By corrupt interest, you mean this one guy up in
one
Arkansas.
It seemed to be him because they effectively, you know, from what I hear in Arkansas, that's what they did in Arkansas. And they think, oh, that's been very profitable. We'll just do the same thing in Mississippi. And so they had all these, you know, ridiculous proof of capital and all kinds of just nakedly corrupt, you know, stipulations to be able to participate in this thing at all.
Yeah.
And there was a very, very loud public backlash to that, especially given that the court hadn't ruled on 65. Like, what do you guys know that we don't know? And so they did get a strong public reaction to that. And so I think that they kind of realized where the winds were going there.
That's
because
good.
If they hadn't done that, who knows what we'd be talking about now. Maybe we'd be having that fight now instead of in the previous session.
Well, and that goes to the point, really, that Americans for Prosperity constantly makes, and I've become more cognizant of since you've been here. It was the outrage of the citizenry that after seeing 65 and what went on, people spoke up and said, don't you go in there and start destroying this bill and targeting, you know, making it to where just a couple of marijuana oligarchs come into our state and control our stuff. Don't do that. And
right.
So it was public outrage that stopped that in its tracks before it happened. We're so bad about, you know, waiting for something bad to happen and be codified into law and then trying to oppose it, which is an uphill battle. People got out in front of that, and we are the 74 and all these other groups.
Right.
Yeah,
so having someone to facilitate, say, here's what they're doing right now.
Right.
This is what they're trying to do right now. Stop it before it becomes a thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So that's great. All right. Was there any time frame on that? If they were to do a special session, is that
it'd be in the fall, you know, before January?
So it triggers everybody could pretty much start doing what they've been on the starting blocks to do for a while for a lot of people, which is crank up things.
And we would anticipate, you know, the special session is called by the governor for a specific thing, which this would be the focus of that. And if we were to do that, it would only be a few days. They would come in, they all these discussions have kind of been happening. Then they do the formal process.
Right. It's like 3 days.
3 days, something like that, typically for a special session that's focused on one thing. So if it does happen, it'll be pretty quick. Or, you know, they'll keep dragging their feet all the way to January, and we'll have to deal with it with, you know, the thousands of other bills being introduced in the regular session.
Wouldn't the risk of a new session also bring up that they might try to go back and re-tinker with this thing again? Kind of, not maybe not start from scratch, but, you know, when people show up in full into the Capitol, they go, hey, well, you know, as long as you're doing this, I want to stick my little thing in there too.
I mean, that could always be the case, although I don't know, I think that it's probably all those sort of barriers and constraints, people kind of know where the wind's going, so they probably would be less likely to make all those changes at this point. So
yeah,
I think what we're seeing coming out now through sort of these discussions is more or less what we'll see with a couple of things. And there's some things that we're going to fight for sure within this that absolutely shouldn't be there. But I would imagine what we just talked about is more or less what we'll see.
Yeah, so not perfect, not probably not as good as 65, but not absolutely horrific. So I guess we'll take that. What should people do? We got to take a break, but real quick. Should people be calling Tate Reeves' office, emailing Tate Reeves' office saying call a special session? Does he need that kind of pressure, or is he ready?
We hear from the governor's office that he's going to be still looking at calling a special session. But, of course, as a citizen, if you want to, you know,
yeah,
and send him to do that a little more,
right,
you can always let him know.
Okay. All right, great. We're talking to Nate Baker, Americans for Prosperity. That's the wrap-up on where we think we're headed with the medical marijuana bill. We'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open just to.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, talking to Nate Baker with Americans for Prosperity. So, Nate, short segment here. Is there anything else that's going to go into a special session?
No, we would only anticipate that if it happens for the medical marijuana bill.
Right. Okay. So they would just cover that. Anything else that y'all are working on with legislature right now, or is it pretty much dead through the rest of the year now that they've kind of hashed this out? Are they meeting on any other issues?
No, not to our knowledge. We're just, I mean, there were hearings on the state income tax that we've discussed on previous shows here. Nothing really. We're kind of waiting and planning for the session in January outside of that.
Right. What was the reaction? You've got your scorecard out on our state legislators here. What's been the reaction with those guys? You got any guys calling and whining that they didn't make A's?
Why did I make a C? Well, you can read the scorecard.
Yeah,
I'll show you exactly why you made a C. And we told you we'd score it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a surprise to you. We've been telling you that during session. And so it's interesting to get calls and texts from various legislators. Kind of, well, but I've helped you on this thing. Like, okay, yeah, but you got to be principled across the board. We appreciate that vote, but
right, know. Yeah, horse trading with y'all is different than horse trading there.
Not used to that. So.
Yeah, you don't just do one good thing and then we ignore the next three things you do. You got to do them all right. Where can people find that scorecard so they can see how their guys voted?
Go to scorecardms.com or msscorecard.com. Both work, and that'll take you to that landing page. You can download that PDF, and you can read every bill we scored, why we scored it, whether we were supporting it or against it, and then see how every legislator in the House and the Senate stacked up to our standards.
Yeah. And so most of the A's are congregated up there around DeSoto County for some reason.
Yeah, we got our DeSoto County champions, good people up there, and a few more. We added a couple this year, and I think we lost one too. So you can check all that out, see how yours voted, see how others voted. It's a pretty great little resource there.
Yeah. Well, any word on what's going to take place this next session with the state income tax? We think we're going to actually get rid of it?
I think there will be movement on it. I think that there's an opportunity to actually do it. It just depends on how we do it and if we do it in a way that really matters or not.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or it's a bait and swap. You know,
if you end up increasing the tax burden overall, but you're not paying income tax anymore on the state level, does it really matter?
Yeah, exactly. Well, did Mississippi end up with a big budget surplus after all this COVID money sloshing around?
Yeah.
Or did they find a way to spend that extra $800 million or whatever they ended up with?
They will if they haven't.
Yeah.
So it just depends on what leadership does with that.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, this COVID stuff, I've been looking at it across the board. I think that school, you know, I've been getting active in this school mask mandate stuff, and it's so stupid. It's actually harming the children, their studies and all kinds of things. I mean, it is dangerous. It's not just an inconvenience. And so, you know, I kind of was bashing my head against a wall for a little while. They're going, why the hell are they doing this? And then some of the moms who have been fighting this for a while start showing me, well, here's all the COVID cash that's going around. Basically,
comply and get the money.
If you do what the CDC says, doesn't matter how stupid.
Doesn't matter if it changes, whatever.
Right. Doesn't matter if it's consistent. Doesn't matter if it's scientific. They've got to continue to play that game just to keep the cash coming. And that's, you know, that's where it gets more difficult, unless I guess you can somehow expose that and just show that these school boards are more interested in the dollars than they are in the children's health.
Right, just like legislators are more concerned about the leadership of the chamber than they are of their constituents. And
right,
so
right.
Once you expose that, it kind of changes that. So
you would hope. These school boards are small. They really don't have that much power against a big group of parents, but they've certainly been running the show for a long time. As parents aren't used to being able to try to talk them down from something.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll see. All right, quick break. We'll be right back. One more segment talking to Nate Baker, Americans for Prosperity.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for today. We're here with Nate Baker from Americans for Prosperity. So this is I can't resist talking to you. You know, Nate's a young guy. I guess I'm an old fogey. I'm gonna do it again with you. I think I do this every time you come on because I have this crypto, this cryptocurrency stuff. And again, there's nuance to my stance. I think every time I bring these things up, everybody goes, "Oh, well, Mike's anti-crypto." I'm not at all. I'm a huge supporter of cryptocurrencies. Anything decentralized. Love the libertarian aspects of all of these things, but I just ran across these headlines the other day, and I pulled them down for the show, and when I knew you were coming on, I would have done this with Steven, too, because I know he's big into crypto. Here are the headlines on cryptocurrency right now. These were all stacked on top of each other in the news yesterday or day before yesterday. First, Powell, colon, Fed mulls launching digital currency. Okay, so I think this is coming.
Well, in many ways, we already have a digital currency.
Right, but what the idea of the Federal Reserve is from the, I guess, call them white papers or whatever, the studies they're looking at doing is essentially like when they want to send out stimulus checks, you would actually on your phone have a Fed coin wallet.
Right.
And they can load it. And what people just don't understand about that, they can get you these made-up digital currencies in moments, but they could do things like you have 2 weeks to spend this. Right. And you can only spend it on these certain
stimulus.
Things. Yeah, you can only stimulate. You know, you can't use it to pay for groceries. You've got to buy a TV with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean,
they can do any number of crazy backward things.
Absolutely manipulate human behavior. So anyway, so I believe the Federal Reserve is going to come out with a digital currency.
Sure. Other countries have already done that.
Right. Here's another one. Crypto equated to toxic pre-crisis swaps by banking watchdog.
Okay.
Now I don't. I'm not.
The hater's gonna hate.
Yeah, exactly. But these haters are powerful. Here is and it goes on to say threat to financial system. And I agree with that. It is a threat to the financial system.
It's a new financial system.
As it should be.
It's
a sound
financial system.
The financial system we have right now is so massively corrupted. Any threat to it, I'm cheering for. At this point. But this is what they're saying. Here's another one. Treasury sanctions first exchange. So the Treasury's going after, and I haven't even clicked on the story. As I say, these are just headlines. And then the last one is crackdown gathers steam. So my hypothesis is I love cryptocurrencies. I love the idea of cryptocurrencies. I don't really weigh in on the value of where Bitcoin is because it is a mania in it. Ultimately, does it bear out that value?
And it's going to fluctuate a lot until it's stable, and it's all about its position relative to the dollar, relative to any other number of other assets. How many people are getting excited and buying into a hype? You know, there's a lot of – and you can watch that in the market. You can watch it go up and down like that. You know, the government's going to try, and they will always try to crack down on it. I don't think that they can. People don't learn about this in school for some reason, but they banned the private ownership of gold. Back when that was a threat to the Federal Reserve, they can't do that with Bitcoin. They will try. They will try to shut down the exchanges where you can't trade dollars for Bitcoin.
But the difference in those two things to me, and again, I want to be very clear. I'm not arguing that you are wrong or that I want it to be this way. The difference between gold is if you didn't turn your gold in, and was that 1931?
Yeah.
If you didn't turn your gold in, Well, it was a big leap for the feds to send people to everybody's house. I think you have gold. We're going to search your house. I need to dig in your yard. And you could go take some of that gold that you didn't turn in, and you could go down to a store and go, hey, look, I've got some gold. I kind of want to get a suit. You want to take the gold? And the guy goes, right. Yeah, I'll take the gold. I'll bury it in my thing. But with this electronic thing, even though it's anonymous floating out there and you own it and they can't necessarily confiscate, you got your codes. I understand most of that stuff. But they can choke off at the exchange level. I mean, when you go to redeem this stuff, ultimately, right now, you pretty much have to exchange it for dollars to buy anything at an exchange. They can just choke you off there, it seems like.
Right, but if you think about Bitcoin as an asset that you can, and you can buy it from Bitcoin, you can actually just trade Bitcoin to Bitcoin, right? You can actually buy things with it. You can acquire it in other ways. That's what they would probably go for first is the exchanges.
But even if you bought something with a Bitcoin, so you could use your Bitcoin and buy something, but the vendor who sold you that, if they are now holding that Bitcoin, and a lot of vendors sell things in Bitcoin, but they never take possession of it. It actually goes through.
They immediately convert it to cash.
Yeah, right. A payment processor essentially that takes the Bitcoin and stuff. So it just feels like there's a lot of very narrow tunnels with the transaction that the government could cut off.
Have to understand what Bitcoin is, and it's not a replacement for cash right now.
Right.
It's something that I can hold, that I can grow, that is not subject to crazy stock market mania. It's subject to its own.
It's subject to its own.
But yeah. It's not being manipulated by other things. And if it does become stable in the future, that's something I can hold. And I'm not going to get taxed on it until I actually turn it into cash, right? And it's something that I can hold, and it's very decentralized. It's very lightweight. I can, because it's, you know, it's literally just 12 words to a wallet that I can take with me anywhere to access it. It's entirely anonymous. I can actually, you know, use it to buy other cryptocurrencies like Monero that are even more anonymous. And so there's a lot of different applications and utilities to it. And I think, yes, will they try to shut down, you know, they're going to try a lot of things, but I don't think they can stop it. And I think the value of it is being able to have a real money, like in the same way that gold was valuable, except it's better than gold because, you know, it's not thousands of pounds to have the same amount of value there. So,
yeah, I mean, there are probably some of those things that I might challenge to a degree. But again, I'm a big supporter, and I love even the idea of just being black market. I think Bitcoin and cryptos will always be around. It's just that I think that they're going to scare the majority of people out of them, and only the hardcore, you know, freedom lovers are going to keep
it. I don't know. I think a lot of the people that would be looking at regulating it would like to benefit from it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting conversation. Nate Baker, Americans for Prosperity, thanks for coming in. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try.